This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit is brought to you by Bluehost. It is my favorite hosting company because they offer great value for money, just $6.95 per month, and it's super easy to set up your full-fledged WordPress blog. If you want to have an example, go over to my personal blog, fatherroderick.com, and check it out. That is completely made with Bluehost. And if you want to sign up or you want to find more information, go to sqpn.com/Bluehost. And by the Amazon store, click on the link on our website, thehobbit.sqpn.com, before you shop at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show.
sqpn.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Where to begin?
Welcome back to The Secrets of the Hobbit. Unfortunately, Bilbo Baggins couldn't join us today for the analysis of the second part of the official trailer, the full trailer for The Desolation of Smaug. But, you know, almost as good. Well, actually, much better, because they're, I think, a little bit more knowledgeable about the entire, how would you say that? They know everything not only about Middle-earth, but also about the movies, which Bilbo didn't know anything about. Bethany and Riley Blanton, good morning and welcome back to the show.
You know what they say, hindsight's 20/20. Hey, Father, thanks for having us on.
Hey, so glad to be back.
I am looking forward to going over the second part of the trailer, which, by the way, between our last episode and this one, I noticed that Warner actually reposted the trailer, which was very strange. And they had this little press release in which they said, you know, we haven't changed the contents of the trailer, but we tweaked it so to improve your enjoyment of it. What do you guys think happened?
I think they listened to the last episode of Secrets of the Hobbit.
I'm sure they, but that's what I think what happened to them was probably what happened to me this week with my psychology class, in that I accidentally turned in a draft of my paper instead of the actual paper.
You know,
still
what?
Got that, good grade, but not
happen.
The actual final finished product. So
yeah.
I'm imagining that they weren't quite done with it and they wanted to release it, but then they decided that. If you have, I'm imagining it's color correction, because I saw a post, I want to say it was on theonering.net, it may have been someone else, where they did a color correction comparison between some of the same shots in the original trailer and some of the shots in this trailer, and it is a marked difference.
Yeah, that's probably it. It's just another, you know, it's little tweaks, and well, that sometimes happens. That even in the span of a few days, they might be able to improve stuff a little bit more. And then, of course, there's the difference between what they see on their screens and what ends up on YouTube, which is, of course, a highly compressed version of the trailer. And yeah, Sometimes the optimization is not exactly optimal. And so, but anyway, I was glad that they didn't make any modifications as far as the contents, because otherwise we would have to go back and redo our first show, which fortunately, as it is fine. And we got some great feedback. And before I move to the first few frames of the second part of the trailer, just want to go over a few of the reactions that I found on our website, the blog for this podcast, which is thehobbit.sqpn.com. We talked about the fact that we noticed some scenes which we just couldn't place in the narrative of this middle part of the book, and we were like, you know, what are we watching? And some people said, you know, remember that they showed material from the second movie in the trailer for the first film, so perhaps that mysterious scene with the army of orcs might actually be of the third movie, and they just used it here.
That's
but
a very good point.
Yeah, it's a good point. And then there was also a little bit of correction here. We said that, well, they got new clothes. You know, Bilbo's blue jacket, perhaps he got it from Beorn. Nenya says, well, I don't think so. I think they get new clothes in Lake Town, not from Beorn, because they were stripped in Mirkwood. And then the query about who the dwarves can trust refers to Bart the Bowman, while they are in his boat, and not to Thranduil. Which is what a trailer does, is kind of makes you think that it's about Thranduil, but actually makes sense that it's about Bart, you know? They've just been picked up after True. Their barrel ride and then see, who is this guy? Can we trust him? But I think the fact that they combine it with these images of Thranduil, you know, they infer that something is wrong with Thranduil or that he's hiding something.
It is pretty heavily intercut, but that's a good catch because that did completely. I missed that point of the timeline. So yeah, good catch, Ninia, and thank you for your feedback. And I think that's especially the way they do intercut it. That there's that one. I think we haven't gone over it yet. I'm trying to place where we left off, but the really ominous shot of Thranduil, just you know, just the eyes,
the eyebrows, and then oh yeah, their eyes as well.
That's the prequel to The Hobbit.
Yeah. Well, and
that's,
then...
That's the fourth Hobbit movie, The Hobbit.
there's one last remark from Ninia, and he or she says, well, and perhaps he's not even speaking to the dwarves here. You know, this offer for help might be to someone else. That's true. It's true. You don't know. You can't tell from the trailer. But they do infer some stuff. Well, let's move over to... to the second part of the trailer. Well, we ended with our the scene where we see Gandalf running and fighting, and then you see the eye of Sauron, which of course we immediately connect with the Necromancer because we know that the Necromancer is actually Sauron. But of course, the White Council doesn't know this yet, and they don't know about the eye yet. So, but for us, in hindsight, again, it's like crystal clear that Dol Guldur has to do something with Sauron. And then the next scene, and I'm just going to play, just to remind ourselves, just going to play the audio for the second part of the trailer. We pick up in Mirkwood, where mm-hmm. Bilbo is looking up and can barely make out the foliage, the red foliage of the trees under which he's standing. So let's listen.
I found something in the goblin tunnels.
What did you find?
My courage.
Good. You'll need it.
Dragon fire and ruin.
That is what you will bring upon us. He cannot see beyond his own desire.
I will not risk this quest for the life of one burglar.
His name is Bilbo.
Well, thief, where are you? Come now, don't be shy. Step into the light.
The Desolation of Smaug, with Smaug, of course, taking a very prominent place in the second part of the trailer. So, Bilbo in Mirkwood, he's looking up. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that he's even wearing his old jacket here. So, is this just before he starts climbing the tree and then you have that famous scene with the butterflies? That's kind of what my first association was. Or is this just before the spiders, or what do you think?
I had thought that it was before the spiders, but I had no real reason to think that. It was just the way that it was intercut. That was my first thought.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, is for me reading the book the first time, that was probably one of the scariest parts, because giant spiders to a little girl are kind of scary. So
not just to little girls. I am terrified of spiders, actually.
Okay.
Well, which I think is one reason, kind of going back to the lazy cob and crazy cob song, why I really like the way Tolkien kind of intercuts what's truly terrifying with some of the funniest parts of the book. Because, on a side note, just how they portray it in the film is going to be really important. But it's going to be funny to see if they can capture just how ridiculous. It's funny because Tolkien thematically tends to like to ridicule evil sometimes, and I like that. I like that you can laugh in the face of it sometimes. And that's the thing that I hope carries through in the film.
Yeah, it's kind of disarming evil, almost as if there is like a subtext of evil is evil. It can be terrifying, but ultimately it's never going to win. You know, there's this like this confidence that we can laugh about it. It is laughable ultimately, because good is always stronger. The next thing that we see is the ring, which again, this is right in the center of the trailer. And so we have seen the Eye of Sauron, and just a few seconds later we see the ring. And again, there's this emphasis on the ring, even though in the book, well, the ring is kind of a gimmick. It makes him invisible and helps him out of tricky situations. But here you have that same ominous feeling that the ring already has some power over Bilbo, and nobody is aware of it yet. So he got his confession that he found the ring in the troll caves, or
down in the mine,
Goblin Town, sorry. And then he's confessing to Gandalf, who asks, "What have you found there?" Well, and this was brilliant. Did you notice that he's actually putting his thumb in the pocket of his jacket, just like old Bilbo did in The Lord of the Rings?
Just about old Gandalf, I think. And then something stopped him.
And that reminds me very much of the opening of the extended edition of Lord of the Rings and the Fellowship of the Ring, where that's really emphasized as how much Bilbo has come to depend on the ring. And so it's fun to see that hint up at the beginning, which is also interesting on a side note, that Bethany and I are of an age and generation where the only version of Lord of the Rings that we've ever seen all the way through is the extended edition. Never seen the theatrical version.
Really? Wow.
We didn't see it in theaters when it came out. So
that is so hard for me to imagine, but seems like yesterday I saw these movies in the theater.
I know, but it's interesting because I really think the extended editions are just fantastic retelling of the books, and so I've never really had the desire to go back and see the short version.
Yeah.
So.
No, you're right, and I love that they included here, and some of the purists might say, well, you know what, the ring, it's not the ring from The Lord of the Rings, so why do they do this? This is not honest. This is not true to at least the intention of the book of The Hobbit. But then you have to keep in mind that Tolkien actually changed the story of The Hobbit several times in newer editions, and actually modified the encounter between the encounter with Gollum. Pretty extensively, and I think in the first version it was just, you know, they did the riddle game, and then Gollum lost, and Bilbo's like, okay, so now I've got the ring, and ta-da, and see you later, and they're like, yeah, I lost. It's just there's nothing threatening in there, and then later he started to revise it and add more of that threat, probably also because he already had plans for The Lord of the Rings, or he had already been writing that, and he actually fixed the discrepancy between these two versions of the story by later on in the appendices explaining that Bilbo, in his first stories that he told back home to Frodo or I don't know who, had actually been lying or partially lying about the way he got the ring. And so, and that was probably also part of the power that the ring had over him. And so that there's actually a previous version of the story that existed, and later on Bilbo decided to come clean and to be a little bit more honest about what truly happened. And that's what I loved about this particular scene in the trailer. He's lying to Gandalf. He's like, I found my courage.
Good. You'll need it.
And I love that, because that's what the ring does. It's power that comes at a cost, and the cost is the corruption of your soul if you're not careful.
Well, Father, that kind of goes back to what we were talking about on the last episode, where when you're adapting this book, if you're choosing which edition of The Hobbit to choose, you would want, you know, Tolkien's later revised vision. It's interesting because creative people change their change their vision or adopt it all the time. I mean, George Lucas is a fantastic example of someone who is constantly tinkering with his films, and a lot of people really hate that. But I personally, a lot of the changes that he makes as a creative person, I can defend and appreciate in many ways. I mean, they're the obvious ones that fans don't like. But by and large, like if you watch Return of the Jedi today, the last act of the film is a vastly different film with way a much larger scale, grander scale TIE fighter battle. And no one talks about that because that's not a controversial change. They talk about, you know, the Darth Vader no, because he changed that part. So it's interesting because sometimes fans don't like it, sometimes they do. But, you know, creative people like Tolkien, you know, everyone wants to have that ownership and be able to change the vision.
Yeah. Well, I think in this, go ahead, Bethany.
Oh, no, you go ahead. I was going a little, I wasn't going to respond to Ryan.
Okay. Well, I think in this case, it definitely, I think it makes the story stronger. It makes the presence of the ring stronger. It gives it much more subtext. I like these dark moments because you feel that, wow, this is not just a children's story. There is way more going on, but you can read it at various levels. As we said last time, is you can still enjoy this because of the humor, because of the parts that are more for children. But then you also have the spiders, you have the big battles, you have the growing menace of Sauron or the Necromancer, and I think that just tells me the genius of the original Hobbit, that it was able to accommodate these extra layers, even though when he was writing it, he wasn't even aware that it would be possible to add those layers. I'm fascinated by the process of storytelling. And I think in a way, this scene, I doubt that this is in the book, that he's lying to Gandalf. But it makes for a bit of humor, and I think it gives it so much more depth. Bilbo seems to be shocked when he sees the ring. Could this be because he lost it? There's been some debate about this. You know, is Bilbo invisible when the spiders attack him? Does he use the ring? Is he shocked because the ring seems to have a will of his own? I don't know.
I'm not entirely sure, but the effect of the ring is one that is always obvious, even when Frodo first sees it, when Frodo really first looks at it as if with new eyes. If you think about the Fellowship of the Ring in the movie, I'm thinking about it when Gandalf starts speaking of it. Frodo doesn't have a hard time believing Gandalf at all. And that's not just because he trusts Gandalf, I feel. It's also because there seems to be a presence of menace around the ring.
Yes.
You know, one thing that was interesting to me was when the Lord of the Rings movies came out, and I had heard of some younger teenagers who had seen the films, they all said that they didn't like Bilbo. They felt that he was kind of weak, that he had fallen more towards evil.
I remember this.
And it was really frustrating to me and Riley because we had read The Hobbit and they hadn't. So they had no concept of Bilbo being a hero. Mm-hmm. They had only seen the Bilbo of the Fellowship of the Ring, and they felt, you know, that he was a weak character.
He was like butter scraped over too much bread.
Exactly. And I think that the point is lost in that the ring just has that effect on people, and hobbits are less affected by it than most.
True.
Bilbo had the ring for many, many years.
Yes.
By that point, and I mean, you can see the beginning of its influence here, and we know the path that will take.
Yeah, I think this look of surprise, kind of back to the trailer, is coming from the spider sequence, but I'm not sure why.
I don't know, but it seems to me that they've, of course, kind of reworked the spider attack a little bit and made it more spectacular, more 3D probably also, and so they might, I don't know, perhaps the ring will play a bigger role in this whole sequence than we know from the books. What I think about this whole, you know, the influence of the ring, what you see here is someone who is already gradually, and this is just the beginning stages, but he's getting addicted to the ring. And just like an addict will never, you know, really tell the truth about how strong the pull is, here too, he seems like, I found my courage. You know, he's hiding it. And so he's going against his conscience here. And I think that and we've talked about this many times, the way that Peter Jackson at least shows the influence of the ring, it is very analogous to what you see with people that get addicted to drugs or whatever other dangerous or even toxic substance. It's slowly draining him, and not just physically, but also mentally, and even his soul is kind of drained. So what do you all think of the spider attack, the way it was depicted?
I just saw a giant spider and kind of freaked out.
Well, I was trying to pause the shot to where you see that initial attack, and you can see he's already covered with webs. So
yes.
I wonder, because I remember in the book, it's interesting because yesterday I was flipping through the book and trying to find the end scene where Bilbo leaves the company just before the Battle of the Five Armies and takes the Arkenstone. And because that, I remember that exchange jumped out to me a lot as to how he and Bomber interacted and how that decision came to be. And then Thorin's reaction afterwards, mainly Thorin's reaction, because it's coming up in the trailer later, because we see something similar to that where Thorin, and I don't have the book in front of me this morning, but where Thorin, I'll paraphrase, was just horrified. And he said, like, what was it? You wretched hobbit. Because he just was at a loss for words. But in the same way, as I watched this, I remember in the book, the spider sequence slogging on. Because by the time I flipped that far into the book, I realized that there's like 20 pages left and the Battle of Five Armies hasn't begun. It's like the ending of The Hobbit. Dr. Corey Olson said it very well on one of his fantastic podcast episodes about The Hobbit, where he talked about how the Battle of the Five Armies in the book is not important. The battle itself, it doesn't take up a lot of page time.
Mm-hmm.
The important things are the events that take place during it.
Yes.
And in fact, it's told mostly in retrospect, where you find out what happened, not what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the same way, that short, Tolkien really thoroughly explored the spider sequence because it takes up a huge, long chapter at that conflict in the lead up to it. So I hope it's the same way in this film, because I think this is what three films is allowing them to do, because they want to show the full Battle of the Five Armies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's going to be the bulk of the third movie, I think.
But if you tried to jam that into this film, you would have to probably cut out a lot of the spider sequence. And here's what's so important about the spider sequence in Mirkwood, is that that's where I think Bilbo truly finds his courage. And that's where that kind of arc of his character comes to full fruition. That's the Bilbo is no longer the Bilbo of the Shire, and he's now the Bilbo who can confront Smaug. And that's very important. And that happens in the sequence. So that's why I think it's important to take the time as he single-handedly saves all the dwarves. And so I mean, the shot doesn't tell us a whole lot, but I think the fact that this is three films, I think that a lot of the third act of this film will be that sequence. At least I hope so.
That is a great point. That I never thought about the spider sequence in that perspective. That it's almost like a coming of age movie or trilogy now of Bilbo slowly becoming goes from a Baggins, turns into a Took, and this is a pivotal scene where he realizes that he has that courage, that he has that strength. And so that makes it, again, clear why this follows this remark of, I found my courage. And immediately he'll have to prove it, that he has that courage, in this whole spider sequence. And you're right, that makes him the Bilbo that will be able to confront an even bigger danger, Smaug. It's genius. I love it. It's like going from the moment, his first crisis during this journey was the fact that he forgot his handkerchief. And now his problem is huge spiders that are super scary. And then what awaits him is this dragon. And then perhaps ultimately, I wonder if how they're going to play this, but the whole controversy of the Arkenstone and all that might actually be even more difficult for Bilbo.
I think that in the end, Bilbo's ultimate challenge lies not in Smaug, not in the Arkenstone, though both of those were very difficult, and both of those showed a level of character that he has that is really quite inspirational. But I think his ultimate challenge lies in giving up the ring. It's a very simple challenge. You wouldn't think that it was that difficult, but I think
that's true.
That
towards
is
the end of the
at the very end in the Fellowship of the Ring, I think that is
that was one of the most moving moments
challenge
for me too. Yeah.
You're right. You're right. And perhaps he's only able to do it because he's already done so many. He has sacrificed himself so many times before, and he's lost perhaps also his security, and it's something that you need to be strong, very strong, to resist the power and the will of the ring. And so ultimately that is a sign of the strength of his character and how much he has grown. Great points. Let's go to one of the most exciting moments for me in the trailer. And that was the glimpse, and it's just a fraction. It's just a few frames. It's like five frames. We see Beorn.
I'm trying to pause it, and it's hard.
It took me about a minute or two to rewind and then pause and rewind and repause. But you see him in his bear form, bear as in B-E-A-R-N. No, not N. gosh, I'm getting confused with Beorn. So he's a bear, or at least looks like a bear. He's running out of a forest, a very thick forest. He looks extremely scary, very menacing.
And he looks angry.
He seems to be covered in something. Or, you know, I was wondering, are those cobwebs? Or there's some gray stuff on his fur. He might just be getting gray, I don't know. But I was like, what is this? Has he just fought spiders, or I don't know.
Oh, I hope not.
No, I don't think so. But
all right, I'll just say this. I try to be very positive, but that would be one thing that I think would not be very true thematically to the book, is if really either Beorn or Legolas and Tauriel are involved in, you know, maybe saving the day or something with the spiders, because that's important. Yeah. That's Bilbo's.
Oh,
you know,
well,
journey.
I don't know about the elves, but yeah, I don't think it's likely that Beorn is involved in that. But
I have a greater concern with the elves more than Beorn.
Yeah,
at this point.
We'll get to that in a minute. But anyway, I was wondering, is this just his fur? But there is something with his fur. It's not just a regular brown bear. And then the big question, of course, when does this happen? Is this the first encounter? Is this later on in the story? Because, of course, Beorn will return around the Battle of the Five Armies. So, again, it's like the question of identifying where this takes place. What I'm thinking, because it's linked to the next scene where we see the dwarves and Gandalf running to quite a big... it's not just a building. It seems like a small town or something like that, or a house perhaps with an outer wall. I assume that this is Beorn's home that we see there. Mm-hmm. And they're running. So I'm thinking 1 + 1 = 2. This is probably how they encounter Beorn. It's not the way that we read it in the book, where you have this very gradual, you know, two by two, they go inside just to avoid making him angry. And perhaps they just stumble upon Beorn and he attacks them, or at least appears to be very menacing, and then they run inside. And then what might follow is that they all run into Beorn's house, try to lock the door, and before that we have that scene of the teaser trailer where you have Beorn, you know, trying to get inside, and you get that very scary moment where you see this huge you know, head and the mouth of this bear trying to get inside.
I wonder if part of it might be because during their stay at Beorn's house in the book, Beorn does go off and take the shape of the bear mm-hmm. form in order to, well, go hunting.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they might show that in the movie, or if they might in some way intercut that. As in, like, Gandalf and the Hobbit and the dwarves could be fleeing from orcs or fleeing from their enemies, and Beorn could step in, not necessarily with the spiders, but with that. Because
good point. Yes, and then actually, for in the perception of the dwarves and Gandalf, it's like, oh my gosh, we thought we were in trouble, but there's an even bigger problem now. There's this huge bear that is now pursuing us, and they don't realize that it's actually Beorn who's trying to save them.
Yes.
Huh. That would be interesting. I think in terms of, you know, telling it in an exciting way, that would work for me. I wouldn't have too many problems with that. And that would explain why his fur is a bit, you know, It's not entirely clean because he's just been in a fight. Who knows? But there is. I had another. Just if you accept the possibility that perhaps they might also show us stuff from the third movie, and I'm thinking this could also theoretically be part of the Battle of Five Armies, or you know, at one point Beorn reappears in the shape of a bear, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, and I do remember the book did specifically state that he burst forth from the trees. I'm paraphrasing, but like
as a bear,
that was like one of the changing points in the Battle of the Five Armies.
Yeah, okay.
When it's burst in on the scene,
huh?
I may be going crazy, but that
no, good point. I mean that would support that theory.
Hmm.
Anyway, so the dwarves enter Beorn's house, and then we go straight back to the barrel ride. That's stuff that is very similar to what we've already seen many times. There is someone who is jumping into a barrel. I was a bit confused by that. It's like, what is happening? See, almost all the other dwarves are already in the barrels. In the barrels, it's a kind of the camera is filming everything from above, and then you have, I guess it's a dwarf. I don't think it's Bilbo.
Well, I think it might be Thorin, because wouldn't it make sense if for some reason in the film they're under a lot of time pressure and they have to leap in the barrels immediately and flee, then Thorin would be the one directing them all in and making sure everybody got in safely before jumping in himself.
But this seems to me that this is outside. This is not yet. This is not any in the Elven King's realm anymore, because the light is, you know, light from outside. But what could have happened, and again, this is just speculation, is that, well, we know that they're being attacked by the orcs, right? And so perhaps some of the dwarves or Thorin gets out of the barrel and confronts, you know, his nemesis again. And then once he dealt with that temporarily, he jumps back into the barrel. I don't know. It's just a detail, but I was wondering who that was. Then we see the dwarves, I think in Erebor. Or at least they're trying to get inside, but then there is this huge, you know, blazing fire.
Hot, 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 hot.
Yes. And they're all, you know, scrambling for cover. I've got the feeling, and there's some other scenes there as well, that this is all part of their initial attempts to get into Erebor, and that the dragon is just, you know, a gatekeeper. But we haven't seen him yet. We just see the fire.
What if this scene where we see Thorin at the end, mm-hmm. when he talks about not risking the quest for the Hobbit, what if that scene is he doesn't want to give Bilbo the responsibility of getting the Arkenstone, and he gets really stubborn about it, and Thorin wants the company as a whole to get the Arkenstone? What if his suspicions are already developing, and his paranoia and his... Well, his what turns into his obsession with it, really. What if that comes into play a little earlier and you see him trying every other way first, thus kind of, well, creating more of a rift between him and Bilbo to begin with?
Yeah, it's possible. In the trailer, it seems to imply that the dwarves are trying to get in, but they can't. And what we end up with is only Bilbo, who seems to have found a way inside.
Right.
As you know, as the burglar. But anyway, I kind of like the fact that there are these attempts that it's not just, well, okay, there's the mountain. Let's just walk in and confront a dragon. It's going to be tough. It's going to be a battle to get inside. And they can dramatize that quite a bit and make the dragon and the ultimate reveal of the dragon, of course, all the more impressive. And to see that he's actually super dangerous and not just scary looking. I like it. Then we see... Now we get to a controversial part of the trailer. And so I'm going to give a lot of time to Riley here.
Processing.
We see Toriel, and it's a great scene. It's beautifully filmed. And we might actually be looking at a CG Toriel. You never know. Fighting spiders. So yep. Toriel and Legolas are... apparently there to help. That is a huge departure from the book.
I hope not.
The hope, there's no more hope, but we just see it here, right?
See, here's my...
You want a separate spider attack, Riley?
As a Star Wars fan, there are certain amounts of desperation that you kind of leave things in your own head that you imagine that you don't like about the films. Everyone has something. where in your head Han still shoots first, even though you watch the newer versions of the film. In this case, I'm actually still holding out hope that thematically they do end up fighting spiders, but it's not simultaneously at the same time as Bilbo, or more specifically, it's not rescuing Bilbo. Like that they could still have conflict there, but keep that theme of Bilbo discovering his courage intact. Because truthfully, Peter Jackson, I think, has a good enough grasp of the importance of that scene to where I do have some measure of faith that he won't get it wrong, I guess.
Could it be that instead of interfering with the dwarves and Bilbo, that, and this might just be an addition to the story, I mean, it's not in the book, but that they decide to ultimately go after the dwarves and Bilbo, but that it's their own journey that we see. That way, it wouldn't really mess with what Tolkien wrote. It would just be like Toriel. It would just be an addition.
And that would be my hope. Yes.
Yeah. I haven't seen these elves with Bilbo and the dwarves in combination with the spider. So, yeah, there is hope actually. But I was very surprised. I was like, I like what I see because it looks awesome. And Toriel, I love it that her character is so, you know, feisty and it seems to be extremely lethal. But yeah, I was like, whoa. So they're not staying in Mirkwood. This is interesting. But again, I'm thinking also commercially, they need to sell this movie. They've got these big actors. Evangeline Lilly was one of the main characters in Lost. Now, who hasn't seen Lost? I mean, she's very famous. And then, of course, Orlando Bloom. If you've got the guy on board and you're already paying him so much money, well, why not develop his story a little bit more?
Right. Now, I haven't actually seen Lost myself.
You're not supposed to say that, Bethany.
Oh, my goodness.
Be our little secret, Father.
Hey, you haven't seen it either.
Okay. Oh, good. All right. So this is how it's gonna go.
But she's great in Lost, and a very, very important character. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's definitely something you might want to check out. Just don't read spoilers because it's very important to not know what happens. Otherwise, you're not gonna enjoy the series at all. But I'm a huge fan. We'll see what happens. We'll see if this is just a parallel story thread and that they will just go after the dwarves. It seems to me a bit redundant if they do that. You know, we see the dwarves fighting the spiders or getting caught in the cobwebs, and then we see Bilbo fight. And then we get the elves, who, of course, are a lot stronger and, you know...
Yeah.
I don't know if that would work if it were like a second spider scene.
Well, I'm not sure... necessarily that it would be separate, or even that their involvement would necessarily mean that Bilbo's heroism is, well, lessened or diminished. Mm-hmm. But it could be that the scene is expanded in the movie where, you know, you have a lot more spiders and it turns into its own little mini battle. Bilbo can still save the day even with the elves there.
They do set it up, the spiders, in the first movie. Where you have that infamous scene with the sick hedgehog, and then or was it
Sebastian? Which, by the way, Father, at Dragon Con, actor's name is blanking on me. Sylvester McCoy. Sylvester McCoy did a panel where the running gag was that he actually in real life genuinely hated the hedgehog. He was an actor on set who was terrible to work with, and how much so he would go on and on about that. That dastardly little hedgehog, Sebastian.
Too funny.
He's stealing like, no spotlight. One ever pitied me. They pitied the hedgehog.
That's brilliant.
Was fine.
Has that been posted online somewhere, that panel?
In fact, I believe...
Did we post that panel?
That may be in the Star Wars Report podcast feed, or it may not be. Sometimes we put those panels. I have good audio of it. So maybe, tell you what, Father, I have a lot of material maybe at some point, maybe during after the film or something, when between seasons. I've got a lot of the Lord of the Rings cast panels at Dragon Con. So
that'd be awesome.
those guys are really awesome, and this year actually let me just hook up my Zoom recorder to the soundboard there. So maybe we'll get some of the Dwarf cast. They're all very entertaining on stage, so that might be something fun for the listeners at a later point.
Nice, very very nice. But we'll see what happens. But I do believe that the spiders, just the fact that they already showed the link between the spiders and evil, growing evil in Middle Earth. Might give this in this separate scene a little bit more weight and kind of connect it with the entire thing that's going on. But we'll see. Bart, the bowman, we see next. And I think that most people that just watch the trailer without really overanalyzing it, as we do this morning, might just think, oh, that's another elf. But it's a hero shot. You see, again, the camera just almost like circles around him, and he's filmed from below, so this is a very important shot. It's just one of those moments where you feel, oh, he's gonna do something heroic. So I'm thinking, would this be the moment or the scene in which he's going to actually shoot the arrow to and kill Smaug?
I could see that being a possibility, although the environment doesn't look quite like it. I wonder if that's hard to tell.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, wow, this didn't expect Bart Bowman in this context yet.
Yeah, it could be more of a heroic introduction to him, especially if his character, I mean, it does seem like his character has more lines and is more mm-hmm. visible
yes.
than he was in the book initially anyway. And it could be a more of a heroic introduction to his character.
That's true. You're right. This could also be... there was this one scene in the movie, in the first movie, that was used in a lot of the trailers where basically they're just, you know, going for a stroll in the mountains. But there's this scene where one by one we see all these elves and we see Thorin also filmed from below. And it's this hero shot. And I thought, watching the trailer, that would be a very important moment in a movie. And it, no, it's just one of those scenes where they're just walking around. So perhaps it's the same thing here. It's just an introduction to him, and then
the shot is followed up. Kind of jumping to the next shot is followed up by the sequence where you see the Lake Town and firing upon. After the argument you see briefly with Bard, he sees nothing but his own desires, which I think is interesting of itself.
Mm-hmm.
I like seeing Lake Town under fire.
Yeah,
what's funny is that they reuse a shot from the first film. If you look really closely,
really.
Right after the there's a shot where one of the Lake Town guys launch a huge, like, for lack of a better term, giant crossbow.
Uh-huh.
And there's a building that explodes.
Yeah.
Building that shot is from the first film.
That's what I thought. It's the attack of Smaug.
Yeah. But huh. It looks really cool.
Yeah, it does. It does, but that's weird. Oh, well, it's probably just put in there because we need more explosions. Oh, well, we don't have any. Let's just use the attack by Smaug. We see more orc fighting in Mirkwood. And then there is an elf. And I was like, I tried to freeze frame. And I'm almost positive that this is Mackenzie, the actor, a.k.a. Figwid, a.k.a. Lindir. And that would be ultra cool. You don't know about Figwid?
No. Dude, I hadn't thought yes. that would be him. That is really cool.
Does uh-huh. look like him because he's got this blue jacket and kind of the same hair. And I'm thinking that would be cool if Lindir would come back and just have a bit of a heroic moment here during the orc fight.
Yeah.
Would make New Zealand fans very, very happy.
Oh, it would.
Love the awesome looking heavily armed elves. The armor is just awesome.
Oh, yeah.
And then we have the sequence where Bart is talking, Bart the Bowman is talking to Thorin, you know, dragonfire and rune is what you bring upon us. You cannot see beyond your own desire, the scene that you were referring to, Riley. And then seems to me, you know, is this actually just a shot from the first movie, or could this also be, you know, another attack by Smaug? After all, this movie is called The Desolation of Smaug, so you want to see him getting angry.
Or it could be a shot from the first movie that is used to show that there will be an attack by Smaug in this one as well.
Well, and there will be an attack just based on the shots that we saw previously. So yeah, that could be it as well.
There's just maybe, there was just like another tower left.
Star Galactica, where they reuse the same shots of the Vipers launching. It'll be the same.
Yeah. Well, it might be that they're still working on it, and that this was the only shot that they had. It came close to what they're going to show us later on. But anyway, we do get the idea that Smaug is also, again, attacking. And then we've got another very controversial little clip, which is the Tarzan scene. Elves flying down a spider thread, and it's like the only thing lacking is the famous Tarzan yell. But some fans were very upset about that.
Well, I guess it was not really going to be any more controversial than skateboarding down .
Yeah, I liked it.
Snowboarding down a giant elephant's trunk.
I secretly liked it. And, when I was in Queenstown in New Zealand, everybody's bungee jumping and doing stuff like this, It's just part of Middle Earth there. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I kind of liked it. And then we see a very short scene, which, again, I was like, what are we looking at? It's a dwarf running away from a huge wall of fire. And it almost looks like one of those modern, Sylvester Stallone movies, or I guess those aren't modern anymore, but it's just one of those action scenes.
It does strike me that, like, the only thing missing from this scene is Bruce Willis.
Yeah. Yippee-ki-yay!
I can't tell which dwarf it is. That's the thing. But this, by the way, my favorite my favorite takeaway from the trailer was this little shot. I don't know why, but it resonated with me.
It looks very cool. I was like, is this Thorin or...
I think it's Feely or Keely, and I think it's from that previous sequence where you saw the dragon fire, bursting through the pillars where they're trying to hide.
That's probably
at Erebor.
It. Yeah. And then Thorin, who doesn't want Bilbo to go inside. And this thief, and then Dwalin, his name is Bilbo. So
I think my read on that, and you can see that I love the glow of the treasure that lights Thorin's face during this scene. I think this is the scene after Bilbo takes the Arkenstone and returns, and Thorin discovers it. I think this is the scene. And I think what I see is when he puts his sword out, blocking Bilbo, I think this is actually the sequence where Bilbo, where he discovers it, and he says, "You miserable burglar."
Cool. That's just right. My take on it. Actually, I was thinking this is before he's going to confront Smaug, but you're right. This might be all the way at the end.
Well, because they're inside the treasure chamber. Yeah. And what I see is the way the lighting is, it looks like Bilbo's trying to leave, not trying to stay. It's hard to tell, though.
Yeah, I think you're right. I was puzzled by this scene. But it does, again, show that Thorin is getting more and more paranoid, and the reconciliation that we saw at the end of the first movie, well, it's just a temporary moment of friendship. But Dwalin seems to be, pretty steady in his friendly behavior. And let's talk about, because we need to wrap things up. Talk about Smaug, because that, of course, was the big, big reveal. We've already seen him in the first teaser trailer, which was awesome. But now we get to see him much better. And actually, there have been people that have been enhancing the kind of dark scenes in this trailer. I think purposely darkened, so we don't see him that much. There's this animated GIF of him with a fire breath, and it looks amazing. It's
just remarkable. I remember seeing, what was the name of the film? Aragorn.
Aragorn. Yeah.
No, Aragorn. Actually,
Aragorn. It's
very close, but
sorry.
By Christopher Paolini, and then they made a movie. It kind of tanked here in the States, so they never made a sequel. But it was one of the first big attempts using modern CGI to really, really outdo themselves as far as the dragon special effects since Dragonheart. Really, like, it was that trying to make something that was really cool, and this just takes it levels and levels up. Even much more so than, because I'll be honest, I didn't really want to say it at the time, but the Smaug or Smaug in the first trailer was I felt a little bit not.
Go ahead.
Didn't very have the terrifying presence that I remembered, but this shot, man, this does.
And I think I know why. What makes him so terrifying? There is this scene where you see his neck, and he's looking for Bilbo, and thief, and you've got this amazing voice by Benedict Cumberbatch with the enhancement, but so menacing, and I loved it, and his neck actually is moving like a snake. It gives you the feeling that there's this huge boa constrictor or whatever huge snake is in the background, and it's that gives him this snake-like behavior, and it's the first time that I see a CGI dragon where they were able to pull that off.
Yeah, it really lends credence to calling them worms.
Worms,
because he was really terrified. Yeah. See the giant snake that breathes fire and
Absolutely.
Can fly.
And what I like also is that we actually don't see him talking. We just hear his voice, which, of course, by the way, incidentally, is also a very easy way to solve the lip sync problems. But actually, I think it makes him more menacing. You just hear this voice. You see something moving in the background. And you're like, oh my gosh, this is terrifying.
You can hear the overwhelming power of his voice
as
well. Well, it completely resonates throughout the whole
And I will say, this would be probably the last thing I could say about him, but it's interesting because I remember way back in the day, Guillermo del Toro said one of the most important things to get right was smile.
Yes.
And I think they did. And in fact, like as I was watching the credits afterwards, Guillermo del Toro was still on there as with a screenplay credit.
True. Although the dragon has changed a lot probably over time. It's probably not the same dragon that Guillermo del Toro designed because he's just got a very different style. It seems to me that they've gone for, and I'm glad actually they did, for a very classic depiction of Smaug. You know, nothing too fancy. You could have done something extremely outrageous and outlandish, but I kind of like the fact that it's classic dragon because of all the imagery that's already out there, including the paintings or the pictures by Tolkien himself. But it looks great, sounds great. I love the final moment of the trailer with that, you know, attack, the fire attack, and you see Smaug's head. It's awesome. That was the moment that I was almost cheering. It was like, whoa, I love this one. All right, and with that, we've come to the end of our discussion of part two of the trailer. To wrap things up, Bethany and Riley, you guys are also the hosts of a Star Wars podcast, and we've been alluding to that during these two episodes. Where can people find that podcast and the blog?
Well, I'll tell you what, Father, for listeners to the show, if you like Star Wars and you enjoy some of the conversations we've had, we have a lot of the same type of stuff leading up to the new Star Wars films. And the best place that you can go is starwarsreport.com/about-us, and that's exactly where you'll find a link to everything that we do there, and that's the simplest way to do it without taking up too much time saying, because I find you say, and our Twitter is, and our Facebook is, just
sure.
starwars.com/about-us, and you can find out all about it.
And the second best place to go if you want to find out about the new Star Wars movies is The Secrets of Star Wars, which is a sister podcast.
I'll say this. I'm a fan and listener. Secrets of Star Wars, my favorite episode 7 Star Wars podcast. You guys did a great job of speculating and breaking down the news. Love it.
I hope that soon we'll see a little bit more of what's going on because they've been extremely secretive. Compared to Peter Jackson.
It's been a year since the announcement, and we're still waiting for stuff.
Yeah. Well, I assume that this is ramping up. After all, they've only got like a year and a half to finish this movie.
Oh, yeah, filming starts. They turn the studios, just on a side note, they turn the studios over in about 2 weeks. They go from filming Cinderella to filming Star Wars.
Amazing.
It's astounding.
All right. Well, thank you so much again for coming on the show, and we'll be back soon, and probably on a more regular basis than before, because, of course, well, we're all now getting very excited for the second movie after this trailer specifically. So join us again very soon. Keep an eye on our website, thehobbit.sqpn.com. Also follow us on Twitter and Facebook. All that information can be found on the blog at thehobbit.sqpn.com. Bethany, Riley, have a wonderful day. Thank you for listening, all of you that are listening. Thank you for your support. Thanks for the reviews on iTunes, and thanks for your feedback. We welcome it. As always, tolkien@sqpn.com, and also on the blog. All right. Thank you, and bye-bye.
SQPN. Leading the way in Catholic new media.